Hi there. Welcome to the Dean Blundell Show podcast. My name is Dean. Thanks for coming. Lots going on today, but before we get to our guest, Mr. Kwesi Millington, as I rub my chest, guest Millington, rubbing my chest. Want to thank our sponsors, Blue Microphones. Blue Microphones. Every broadcaster uses them, and if you don't, you should. Blue Microphones. That's what this is. Get yours today. Also, want to say thanks and hello to our friends at Ed's Fine Imports, where they have Gitch. Gitch. Buy three, get one free when you use promo code Gitch3. Also, thanks to our friends at Streamlabs and, of course, Twitch and DK Media. Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us. It is Friday, the day after one of the most unbelievable basketball games I've ever seen in my life. And our next guest didn't watch any of it. Please welcome to the program, former RCMP officer, current life, health, and wellness coach, motivational speaker, Mr. Kwesi Millington. Hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Thanks for introing me by saying I didn't watch our world champion Raptors.
Well, I asked you off the top. I'm like, do you watch that game? Because I watched it last night, and I turned it off. I got to tell you, I turned it off like, I don't know, with like 3 minutes left, and then turned it back on with about a minute left because I thought, that's what pussies do. We turn things off. We can't actually handle the action. And so what I did was I ended up getting back into the game, and it was over. It was basically over. The Celtics were up by two. They needed three to win, two to tie. It was an inbounds play, 0.5 seconds left. Kyle Lowry throws this third option pass over to OG. OG nails a three from the corner. And I went fucking insane in my own house by myself, jumping up and down like an idiot.
Well, that's how you should be as a fan.
Well, and that's what I'm a fan. Like, I love the team, and they're absolutely weren't exceeding expectations in this round of the playoffs. And I watched them play all year, and I watched every single game, every single Raptor game this year. So I'm invested. But I still didn't want to watch the end of that game because of my, and I don't know what's wrong with me. Like, are there people like me all over the place that you start watching games and you can't take it because the intensity's so crazy that you just fucking turn it off?
Yeah, I think that's the way it goes. I mean, everybody's thinking that we're not going to repeat. So, you know, if you can kind of stay tuned in.
Yeah.
That's courage right there, I think.
Oh, is it ever, dude? Because I couldn't, like, it was hard for me to turn that game back on. And then the only reason why I did is because I was watching the Jays game, and I watched Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Round third and screw it up totally. And I'm like, why? What am I watching? I can't watch this now. I can't. They were down 2-0 to the Red Sox. Anyway, and they came back and won, and I turned that game off because they were losing too. That's okay. I got to watch the whole game, I guess. That's the whole thing.
Yeah, you got to commit, man. You got
to
commit.
Kwesi, great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining us here at DeanBlundell.com. You're also one of our contributors, and it's great having a contributor like yourself because you're a health and wellness coach. You're a life coach. I know you you do a whole bunch of training. Former RCMP officer, and your history is unbelievable. So why don't you just tell me what it is you do now and where we can find you at KwesiMillington.com, and then we can go from there.
Well, you said it, KwesiMillington.com is where you find me. And what I'm doing now is being a past police officer, my main focus is first responders, you know, helping with resilience, helping with building confidence, and helping coaching people that are kind of stuck and don't know how to get out of their funk. If they've gone through something, getting past that and being able to, I hate using the cliche, live your best life, but, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you literally go into the job that you used to have with first responders and police officers, and you go and what is it you talk to them? Explain getting unstuck. Explain that thing.
Well, a lot of times, you know, we see a lot of different things on the job, and it's not just police officers; it's first responders, whether you're healthcare. And I've started to branch out into high stress organizations. I mean, anytime you encounter stress, there you can either deal with it, have the resilience to get through it and move on, or you stay stuck in, you know, reliving the past and not being able to kind of, I guess, rise above it. And I just give strategies to people who are stuck and not able to move out of that, not get over that adversity to be able to you know, find ways to cope and, you know, feel better about themselves and what they've gone through.
Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating that's your vocation, because several years ago, your name became came into the news. It came to our attention with the death of Robert Jasansky. Pardon me. You were one of four officers who were at Vancouver International Airport. Was it Vancouver? Yeah, it was Vancouver International Airport, RCMP officer, where you were called to intercede on behalf of someone who was having an issue. It was Mr. Jasansky. And he was tased and he eventually passed away. Now, what can you tell me about, because, you know, I know your story and I know why you're here, but, you know, you're talking about you going in, teaching people how to help people like you when you needed help. And that's the fascinating part to me.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of like, I think it was Steve Jobs that said, you can't connect the dots looking forward, you have to connect them looking back. And I wouldn't say in those moments when I went to the airport, when I dealt with that, that I had all these answers that I have today. Mm-hmm. But when you live through things, that's when you get those kind of answers. And it's kind of strange because I can talk to people and there are kind of a few different groups of people. There are people who know the incident and were around when it happened.
Yeah.
And so I explain it to them and they kind of pipe in and say, okay, oh yeah, I remember that. And the conversation goes differently than with someone who hasn't heard about it or never knew anything about it. So I speak to youth as well. And sometimes they don't, of course, they don't know exactly what happened. So a lot of times I'll just pretty much direct them to Kurt Petrovich's book, who wrote about the factual incident. He's a CBC reporter. Mm-hmm. And so I just say, okay, well, he went through everything as opposed to me sitting you down and explaining everything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know if the question was what.
The question was what, what happened that night? Yeah, like you're an RCMP officer at that time for how long? Love your job.
2.5 years on. And the four of us had various different levels of service.
Yep.
And a call comes in, and I think a lot of people don't realize that it's not always action, go, go, go as a police officer. Vancouver Airport is the second busiest airport in Canada, but not very busy at all as far as crime goes. So when a call comes in like this, it's not really expected that you're going to have to be physical. And so it wasn't really something that we thought, okay, yeah, this is what's going to happen. But when the call comes in, we go to the airport, and as I've said numerous times, actually during the case, tried to communicate, didn't communicate with him well. And what happened was he grabbed a stapler off the desk. He got into a combative stance. Combative is our term that we used in policing.
Yep.
And I was the officer with the taser and I tased him. We got him under arrest, unfortunately, and tragically, after we got him under arrest, he died of heart failure.
Right.
And it's kind of strange when you're in policing because you hear when you're in training, you may go to a call where someone may die or may get hurt, but you still don't think it's going to happen to you. And you still don't think that you're going to be that officer on that call.
Especially 2 years into the gig, right? You know, you're 2.5
especially,
years
Especially, 2 years into the gig, there's so many, at an airport where there wasn't a lot of a crime. And with a tool that we were trained was non-lethal, right? So there was so many factors that went into the fact that we had no idea that he was going to die at the end of the call, before that night was over.
Well, and the reason why tasers were introduced is because it's a non-lethal way to engage somebody, right? It's a non-lethal way to be able to get control of somebody who you can't get control of.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. It's the step, it's to avoid us ever having to use lethal force.
Yeah.
And and so that's what happened that night.
Hang on. Did you find out he had passed at the scene, like right after it happened or right after the incident?
Well, it was at the scene.
Knew. Yeah, so you knew.
You know, paramedics came in and,
what was the first thought? What was the first thought in your mind? Like, what was the first thing? Like, that's heavy.
Because
that wasn't the policing you were doing. You weren't out there to get somebody.
No, not at all. I mean, it's, we're talking 12 years, was it 12 years back now? So, I mean, I know one of the first thoughts was surprise that actually happened. That state of shock where you're like, someone's actually dead. If you pull out your gun and you fire it at someone and they die, that's a reasonable response or reasonable thought to think that might happen. But when you don't expect that to happen at all, yeah, it's just shock and surprise at the time.
And so take me through then that happens, and obviously we all know what happened. I followed it. We talked about it on the radio several years ago and just how, and listen, my opinion doesn't matter, but we talked about the details. I've always been of the opinion, which doesn't matter, that sometimes police work goes sideways to no fault of the police or the victim. Sometimes those things happen. So knowing that that's what happened, you go from, paramedics, everybody, I'm sure you finish your shift, you leave, and what happens after
How long do you have? Jeez.
that? Dude, I'm here all day. This is my house. I'm not going anywhere.
All good, all good. The video, there was a video of what happened. It was in an airport.
Yeah, we've
There
all
were
seen it.
people waiting. Video comes out, and the version of what happened that was given by, that was given was not the same as what happened when the video was viewed. And that was no fault of ours. There was a lack of communication between the person who reported it and us as the officers who were there. So there was this big conspiracy that was drummed up that we must have covered up something as officers to try to save ourselves. And that was kind of the feeling that was going through the general public. And we were actually. The case was actually given to a few different police forces to look at, as well as Provincial Crown, because in BC, they're the ones who decide whether they're going to lay any charge against the officers or not. So
It's
they
like
looked at
SIU
everything.
here, right? It's like SIU,
Yeah, I guess you
sort
could
of.
say that. And so basically, long and the short of it, they looked at what we did, said, okay, there was no crime committed as far as use of force here. They did what they were trained to do. And we weren't charged with anything. However, there was a public inquiry in 2009. So we're basically now in court talking about what we did that night.
And there's four guys.
Yeah, and there's four
There's
guys.
four RCMP
So,
officers, yourself,
yeah.
two other guys. Now I'm just putting this out there because this is me putting it out there, not you. But
Okay,
it's
sure.
you, an indigenous man, because I've read the stories, an indigenous co officer, and then two white officers, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
That's
So
right.
continue. So four of you get charged.
Yeah. So four of us. Well, we didn't get charged yet. We went to this inquiry in 2009, and so the timeline is 2007. We go to the airport. 2009. We go to the inquiry. We testify. But what we did in 2007, based out of that testimony, we were charged with perjury in 2011. So if you say 2007, 2009, and then we were charged with perjury in 2011.
Yeah, there's no anxiety there for 4 years, is there? Wondering what's going
Not
on.
at all. Everybody, life is normal. I had to get out of BC and move back to Ontario, right? So, which is fine. My family's here, so it's all good. But anyways, that's the timeline of what happened. And we basically were charged in 2011. And you know how the court system goes here. It wasn't until 2013 I was in my trial, so that's another couple of years. And I was basically in and out of court for 2 years. And in 2015, I was convicted of perjury in my own trial.
That's it.
Another officer was convicted of the four of us of perjury, and then two other officers that were also charged with perjury. We were all four of us charged. Four separate trials, two acquitted and two convicted.
Okay. So you're convicted and you get 6 months in the big house. Is that correct?
So the sentence was 2.5 years, but if
For
based
perjury.
on
For
this,
perjury.
the sentence was 2.5 years,
Right.
30 months,
Gotcha.
and in our system here, the federal system, I had to serve a third of that.
Okay.
So a third of that is 10 months, 6 months in jail, 4 months in a halfway house. So that's the 10 months. That's a third of my sentence. And that's what I ended up serving.
And the other gentleman that got convicted, same thing.
He got 2 years less a day, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
So a little bit less of a sentence.
Okay, and the other two guys that got nothing, they went back to policing. They're still policing. They're still doing their thing.
Yeah, they're still police
Okay,
officers.
so now what I find interesting, because I've done a little bit of homework, is and listen, I haven't talked to you about talking about this part of it, so this might come as a surprise, that the two white officers did not get convicted of anything. However, the two visible minority officers did, yourself and an indigenous gentleman who was a police officer. And I listen, I can say it that that's not fair in my eyes. I can say it if that's that something smells to me. Something isn't right to me. Something is wrong when all four of you guys are charged with the same thing, and I'm not impeding guilt. I'm not saying anything invective about what you've gone through. What I'm saying is that all of you did the same. All of you were involved, all of you with the same charges, and a Native Canadian and a Black Canadian officer did time while the two white guys walked. Is that weird?
You're not the first person that said that to me,
Yeah.
obviously, especially the times that we're in right now. I mean, I'm not blind to that.
Well, because
And
it
even
fucking
be
bothers me. Like I read about, because I knew you're coming on the show, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. And this is what, like years, this is years ago. This is years ago.
This is 2015, before George Floyd, Jacob Blake, before all of this stuff going on
And
now.
you're a cop. And you're a
And
cop.
yeah, used to be.
Yeah, used to be.
Used to be. I mean, it's a crazy
How do you
situation.
explain that? Like, do you, like, I would love to get your perspective, because I, on the outside, and anybody listening, if you get all the details, you understand what happened and you know who was charged and what's going on. You know, it's easy to draw a direct correlation to there being something fucking really weird here for me. Not you, but how do you look at it? What do you tell people?
If people say that to me, okay, yeah, it seems like race is involved. There must be racist. I don't know. Like, people will say to me, because we had four separate judges, were the two judges that acquitted the white officers not, did they have a certain view? Were the two judges that convicted myself and the indigenous officer, were they racist? People ask me that. I can't answer that. I don't know. It could, you can look at the case and make your own conclusions. Another person might look at the case and say, oh no, they went on the facts. They went on what they saw and made an unbiased decision.
Right.
I don't know the truth. And so I just have to let people think what they want to think. And I can't accuse anybody of anything I can't prove.
So
So
how do you, okay, I know that. So how long did you spend in jail? First of all, how long did you spend in jail?
6 months in jail
And then
and
4 months in a
4 months
halfway house.
at a halfway house. So 10 months in the correctional system.
So 6, 10 months in the correctional system. And
Yeah.
you've had obviously time to think about the fact that you're in jail, and another indigenous man is in jail, and two white guys that did the same shit or not. Like, what, how do you let it go? Do you let it go? And was that the moment, like, is that what your, because I've read your story. I know you suffered from depression after this, and you went through the gamut emotionally and mentally. How did you work through that, and what was the bottom for you?
Well, the bottom was when I got charged, to be honest. I mean, because in 2011 is when I was charged with perjury, and I had no idea that was coming down. I didn't think that we were going to get charged, because I went to the inquiry and I thought, okay, I told my truth, we'll get through this and I'll be back to work. And so when the charge came down, I joined the police force thinking, okay, this is it. I got my 25-year job, my cradle to grave job, I'm good.
Yeah.
And then I had not and then I had nothing. So then I'm thinking, what am I going to do with my life. And that's when I found myself just in a deep depression. And I read about it in my book. I'm sitting on my bed and I have a handful of pills and I'm thinking, I don't want to live anymore. Now, I think when I got to that point, the one thing that saved me was starting to think about what else could I do with my life. And that's one thing I tell officers and people that are in the first responder community, because they get so attached to their career.
Right.
And maybe people outside of first responding do it too, but they get so attached to their career. Like, listen, I'm working four 12-hour shifts. Two 12 to 11-hour shifts, 4 days on. I'm spending time with cops when I'm off duty. I'm picking up overtime shifts. That's my life. And a lot of officers get into that and they can't see anything if that's taken away. And that's why suicide is highest amongst first responders, right? And depression is highest among first responders, because you're so enveloped into that intense world. And
that there's nothing outside of that. Yeah.
And for me, getting back into fitness, getting into speaking and learning that maybe there is something else I could do with my life. I'm fortunate that I started to realize that before I went to jail. Because
no shit.
I spent the first month in jail in solitary. And if I
was, was that for your own benefit? I was going to ask you that. Like, what's it like when an RCMP officer goes to jail? Like there aren't, you're not a lot of friends, not a lot of guys are going, you know what? Come and hang out with us.
It's okay. Yeah. Fortunately on that end, the administrative staff was very protective of my identity.
Good.
And so they just decided, okay, well, let's put him in solitary for now, figure out where we can put him so that nobody ever finds out who he is. Right. So, that's why I started off in solitary. But for me, starting to find, a purpose outside of policing was what I had started to do before I went to jail. And that I can say honestly is what saved me, and helped me not to think so much about
everything,
the strangeness of my trial, the two convicted, two acquitted, oh God, I'm not a police officer anymore. Like all these things, there were times that I've always thought about it, even now, right? Mm-hmm. And I think moving into something other than policing really helped me.
So you're fucking crazy story. Well, it is, man. Like, you know, it's funny because these interviews, you're afraid of hurting someone's feelings or dredging up shitty memories. And I think everybody that's experienced the bottom is like hyper aware of it, right? Like I'm careful that but I don't want to make you relive the shittiest moments. But, you know, from sitting on the edge of your bed with some pills going, ah, death looks like a really peaceful finish line. To, you know what, I'm going to help other people. I'm going to help other people in my situation. And then on top of it, getting 10 months in the cooler to chill out. Like it's not, and then it's, and to still want to help people after that, you know, like that was what it was like then. But, you know, you get through prison after 6 months, halfway house after 4 months, you're married. You know, you haven't seen your wife really, you haven't had a normal life in a halfway. If anybody's seen anybody come and go from a halfway house, it's like, you have no freedom there either. Really. I mean, just a little bit more. I guess I go back to the same, you know, do you just decide to forget? Or do you just decide to move on? Because that's where you talk about stuck getting at the start of this whole thing. To me, you know, I can't see many people being able to move past that spiritually, mentally, or physically. Specifically, if you add in the race stuff, and you're saying you don't, I do. I find it fucking horrendously unfair.
Yeah, the way you ask questions, it makes me think of so many answers. And I'm thinking about something you said 5 minutes ago versus right now. But I'll do my best to answer. I mean, like you said, going from the edge of the bed to where I am now, it's one day at a time, right? Literally.
But was there an intervention? Did God like come down and go, Kwesi, don't get stupid here. Don't get crazy. Kwesi, Don't do that. Like, what?
Crazy.
Did someone walk in and bust it? Like, and then, because there's got to be an arc where you go, okay, enough. I need to figure this out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I call it a voice of God, but it definitely had an internal voice that said to me, "Help somebody." And I don't know where it came from. I don't know. Like, I'm not spiritual in the sense that I go to church or anything like that, but I do believe there's a higher power, and I think there was an intervention of some sort. And for me, at that time in 2011, I had been a certified personal trainer for years, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And so I just went to this mom and pop gym that was like 10 minutes away from my house. They had some ad that I happened to see that they were looking for, you know, personal trainers. And literally I just walked in there and I said, I don't need really to work here. I know a lot about fitness. Is there anyone that needs help? And they said, there's this guy that we can set you up with. He needs a workout program. And it was right there that I realized, if I can help one person, then I have some purpose. And I'm not going to check out just yet. And that one person kind of got me on a path of thinking, okay, well, how else can I help people? I started volunteering at it was a food bank in Mississauga, and packing food. And I volunteered for children organizations since. And that's the secret. If you can get your eyes off yourself, you kind of forget to kill yourself. And it's kind of weird to say it like that, but
it's living out of self. like that's literally what it's called in the journey that people take, is if you want to stop thinking about how shitty your life is, truly live out of self, which means give to other people, give someone your time, go and help somebody, go out and do something for somebody, get involved in something that's really, really altruistic or philanthropic. You know, those are the things that will always cure what ails you if you feel like shit about yourself. But you know what? And I'll tell you this, I've had some weird times too. And I said this to someone the other day because I had a great day and da 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 da. Doesn't matter what it was. I looked at him. I'm like, fuck, am I ever glad I didn't kill myself?
You know what I mean? Same thing. I'm totally with you.
Do you ever look up and go, whoo, am I ever glad I didn't off myself? This isn't that bad.
You know, and that's what I always come back to. When I feel like shit, when I'm feeling bad about myself, I'm like, who else can I help? And the same thing happened to me when I was in solitary. I felt really down about myself again, and I didn't want to be around anymore. Of course, now I have a wife, and you know, I have someone that's waiting for me when I come out, but I just felt very lost. And fortunately, honestly, God sends these people to me, man. The universe sends these people to me when I need them. There was an English teacher in the prison who needed an English tutor to help other inmates. So he comes and he leaves the high school system in Kingston and comes inside the jail and becomes an English teacher in the jail. And I walk into his office, and I remember he stood up and I see his master's degree on the wall. And I'm like, why are you in here when you could be teaching anywhere? And he tells me 89% of prison inmates in Canada don't have their high school diploma. 89%. Now, I looked up the stats. It's around in the 70s now. But he said to me at the time that if I can help just a few of these guys get their high school diploma so they never come back here, then I'm doing way more good than just being out in the regular school system. And fortunately, you're in jail, everyone has to get a job. Also, fortunately, I was one of the few with a high school diploma. I took the job as a tutor, helping these guys get their diploma. Once again, I'm helping people, and that gave me a sense of purpose even inside. So it always comes back to that. So every time I feel down, I know the cure. Okay, who can I help? Who can I help?
Do you ever get too carried away?
That gets me through today. It's good.
Do you ever get too carried away and like you go, man, I got to go help people. And then you go helping people and they're like, dude, I don't need any help. I already told you. You're like, yes, you do. And I need it more than you.
You know, I've never had someone say that to me, like, oh, you're giving too much help, because I think I know my boundaries there. I'm not forcing myself on anyone.
Yeah, I don't know any boundaries, Quasi. I don't know any boundaries. So I just over help. I'm an over helper now. Yeah. I'm one of those guys that I'll just take over for you. Like if you're mowing your lawn and I see you on your mowing your lawn one day and I'm driving by, I'll get out and go, get out of the way. Let me do this for you. You could be like, no, I got it. I love it. I love mowing the lawn. I'd be like, Kwesi, go sit down, relax. I got this.
Okay. Well, I hate mowing the lawn. So can you come do mine too?
Fuck no. I hate mowing the lawn too. That was just an analogy, bud.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Just checking. I thought I'd throw it out there. I hate mowing my lawn.
Yeah. Well, I'm still, you know what? If you really needed it, I would come and do it. I would. That's the kind of guy I become. Yeah. Kwesi Millington is our guest, former RCMP officer, health and wellness coach, motivational coach. You say some, you use some really interesting words a lot, just a couple. One of them is resilience. And I think you're probably the right guy to talk to about resilience after hearing your story. When people come to you and they say, I am here and I don't know why I'm down here, but I need to get back up here, or I need to get out of myself and into a life that I really want, a life where I'm happy. You know, and that's one of the things I think I talk to people about the most, that, you know, if they struggle with an addiction or struggle with sobriety, I talk to this one, or these conversations are the most common, to be honest with you. And the conversation is, I just want to be happy. You know, that's what people say when they're down, right? I just want to be happy. And when you're being victimized, is very difficult to be happy because you're waiting for the next time you're going to be victimized. See people like yourself, who, whether or not you're familiar with the story, you got screwed. People who have had things that have happened to them unfairly. And people become dull, spiritually dull, to the point where they medicate. Maybe it's drugs, maybe it's alcohol. In my case, it was booze. But in the estimation that I have of the time that I've wasted, if someone could go back to me and I could meet a Kwesi Millington like 10 years ago, and I could come to you and I say, Kwesi, listen, I'm stuck. I am down here and I don't know why. How am I supposed to get here? What am I doing? What kind of inventory do I have to take?
Well, I mean, you have to look at, first of all, why you're down there. What is it that you feel that you're down there? And typically when someone comes to me and says that, they explain a situation where they've been screwed, or, you know, something has happened to them.
Do you ever notice everybody's been screwed too? Like even the people, everybody's been screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And depending on who you're talking to, maybe some tough love is in order. Like that kind of statement saying, listen, everybody gets screwed over at some point and you have to accept that. Yeah. And I think looking at other people and seeing how many people have been screwed over by life and things that have happened to them is helpful. They've actually done studies and show that when you study people who have been resilient, subconsciously it makes you more resilient, because we have this thing like, I'm the only one going through this. I'm the only one going through this. And even though, you know, on the surface it's ridiculous, you believe that. And you have to remind yourself that you're not the only one going through it. And the second thing I say is just, what is it that you can control? Every single day, what is it that you can control? You see people in this epidemic we're in and they're afraid and they're like, okay, well, is there going to be a second wave? And they ask all these questions, these what if questions, and what has happened and what if? Okay, well, what can you do right now? Mm-hmm. What can you do right now? What's in your control? And focus on that all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. I was 23 and a half hours a day in a solitary cell. What can I do right now? I don't know, because I didn't know I was going to serve just 6 months of my 2.5 year sentence. There was a while I didn't know how long I would be in jail until my parole officer had some meetings with me and I figured it out. Mm-hmm. So what can I do right now? And that, coming back to that question over and over again, has been so helpful to me. And I think it'll helpful to anyone, no matter if you've been to jail or not.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That last part, I mean, all of it is brilliant, but what you're selling, which I love, is accountability, right? You're selling accountability to people. And when I say accountability, it's very difficult for some people to understand. But again, back to what you said, accountability comes with the control aspect, being able to control what you can, know the difference between the two, that you know, can I control it? Can I not? And being able to learn from it regardless, like being able to understand that, hey, listen, I can only do what I can do today. And that's not, and I used to think that was about work. Like when you said, oh, you need to go just control something, go do something you control. I'm like, oh, what does that mean? Do I go right now? Do I go right now and go do something? But it has nothing to really do with physically controlling things, right? It has to do with the ability that people have to be able to stay in their mental lane, to be able to not future worry, not rear regret. It's to be able to understand that everything that you're worrying about is probably an outcome that might not even happen, which as we all know, that's what anxiety is, right? The experience of anxiety is it leads into depression or post-traumatic stress disorder. All of those things are because we worry about what we cannot control, the outcome of anything. And it was explained to me a long time ago, and I fucking loved it, and I live with it, is that there are only 2 days. There's really only 2 days you don't have to worry about. One of them is yesterday, and one of them is tomorrow. Those are the only 2 days you don't have to worry about, because yesterday is fucking gone. It's done. It's over. You can't get anything back. No dough, no money, no amount of side hustle or weird cup games will get you anything that you did in your rearview mirror back. Nothing's going to get fixed. You can't refix your life that's passed. It's done. And then tomorrow hasn't been born yet. And all we do is we play these. I fucking do it all the time. I'm one of the worst, and I have to be very mindful. Mindfulness is another part of this, and I'd love to talk to you about mindfulness too. But, you know, the inability that we have to focus on not just what's at hand right now, but to allow tomorrow to take care of itself and to be better today and invest in yourself today by learning how to control that thought process, whether it's through meditation, whether it's through counseling, whether or not you've got an addiction issue that prevents you from actually being able to live in reality. But accountability, acceptance is a big one. I think for a lot of people like you, maybe sitting in a jail cell for 23 and a half hour days going, I'm mad, but you got to accept that you're there. All right, I'm here. Now what?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I have, I talk about eight A's to overcoming adversity, and those are two of them right there, accountability and acceptance. Mm-hmm. Another one is awareness, which is just mindfulness. Tomorrow doesn't ever exist, right? It's not ever going to be here. It's always, you can only live in today.
Yeah.
So, and part of that is also establishing a morning routine. So
is that important? How do you
start your day? Well, I know for me, it's important because that's when I get my meditation mindfulness time in, because anyone I tell to be mindful and come up with even just 5 minutes a day of just breathing and coming back to the moment,
sure,
clearing thoughts, if you don't schedule it, it rarely gets done. So what doesn't get scheduled doesn't get done. And for me, the schedule is in the morning. And
schedule the
why not do it in the morning?
You know, I'm taking notes here, right? Do you know why I'm taking notes? Because this to me is like free wellness coaching.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, there you go for all your listeners there. Then
morning. In the morning, have a routine, meditate. Now, a lot of people will say this. I meditate almost every day. I have the Calm app, and I do it through these wonderful people in the States called the Mindful Movement. You can just get their shit on YouTube. It's incredible. Haven't done it, it talks about healing through post-traumatic stress, deals with delta waves. It talks about letting go, living in now, being accountable, understanding what you can control and what you can't control. And it's the focus. You know, people think meditation's fucking weird and you gotta spray a bunch. And I'm the most meditating guy you'll ever see, right?
Yeah.
But it has helped me stop, you know, that thinking about tomorrow and yesterday. It just stops. It just stops when you do it properly and you focus on your breathing and you take a minute through guided meditation to be able to figure out who you are. And then you can catch your breath, and then it makes it easier for you to deal with your life. You know, it's an amazing tool that more people should use and not make fun of, because I love it.
Yeah. And the one more thing about the morning time is they've done studies on the brain and something about brain waves linking to the subconscious. And when you first wake up in the morning, you have the greatest link to your subconscious mind because your brain hasn't sped up yet to everything that's going to happen to you in your day. So that's to do it in the morning. But I know what you mean. I'm not that, like, I'm not a Buddhist monk or anything.
I am agnostic. I don't
I'm not a
care.
yogi or anything.
Yep, I don't believe in God. I believe in God, but not like fuck religion. I hate it. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and when you try to, that's why I don't really talk about it as meditation when I speak on it, because people kind of step back when you say meditation. Oh, okay, yeah, that means sitting in your yoga pose on a cushion with candles everywhere for
No, it
half an
doesn't.
hour. No, it's just a matter of just focusing on your breathing for a couple minutes. I'm just saying that's what people are saying,
Well, you know what it
because they get
does?
intimidated by it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna start telling those people it also makes your genitals larger, fellas.
There you go, there you go. Every man on the planet will be doing it.
Hey guys, yoga's the best. You relax so much, your wiener gets bigger. Trust me, you'll do it. We'll have the happiest people in the world, and they'll go, "It was a trick, wasn't it, Dean? It was a trick. You got me." But anyway, continue with the meditation. You don't call it meditation. Why? Because people think it's weird.
Just mindfulness, and the way I sell it to very, I guess, cynical first responders, especially in the policing world, is I say, listen, first, Navy SEALs call it box breathing, right? So they breathe in for four, hold it for four, and then out for four. They use it in battle so that they can have better vision, that they can be more concentrated in war. When they come back from war, they're standing in the grocery aisle and they don't want to be, hypervigilant. They use it to stay calm here. So if they can use it after going out and seeing what they see, then why wouldn't we use it too, right? So that so I want to bring someone to them that's closer and more relatable to them. So
Right.
they may not be able to relate to that person in India sitting on a cushion, but they can relate to a David Goggins who's a former Navy SEAL who does this box breathing and talks about
Dude,
to Jocko Willink or any of these.
David Goggins is the biggest machine of a human being you'll ever meet. Like
He didn't realize how weak I am as far as my workouts. I think I go hard in the gym, and then I look at one of his videos and I'm like, okay, I got to step it up a notch, times 10. But just as an example.
But that's and we live in a great time. People think that this is the worst. 2020 is the worst. I think it's like everybody's waking up a little bit too, right? We're all waking up to racial inequality, which is, really good because it's been going on for a few hundred years. We're all waking up to being mindful is a big term that people use today, which is a wonderful thing to be. We're waking up to the fact that you can actually invest in your wellness. Me, of all people, to invest in my wellness means I'm investing in whatever future it is that I'm going to be able to control. Only my future. I can only control me in that future, and that doesn't mean controlling everything around me. It means if I've got peace of mind and if I've settled down enough in here, that the manic anger, the weirdness that comes with not being in control, because what happens when we don't get control, we burst. Like we turn into weirdos. And that's just a nice way of me saying that's when people look at you and go, there's something fucking wrong with that guy. Do you know what I mean? You make bad decisions, you do stupid shit. That's what happens. So it's a fascinating thing because to me it's like a just a tool. It's one of the tools that I use to be able to navigate life in and from a happy perspective. And it's never let me down, never once, never.
And yeah, they never will. And I also say mindfulness also makes you more present with the people in your life. So when you recognize how to come back to the moment, the now, all the time, you do that when you're talking to your wife or you're talking to your girlfriend, you're talking to your kids, and you're more present in your interactions with people. So it makes you better when you're not meditating. So it's not just about the silent time.
I couldn't agree with you more. Kwesi Millington is our guest again, motivational speaker, former RCMP officer. Now I couldn't help but notice we talked about it earlier that you're black.
Oh, shoot.
Sorry.
I gotta go tell some of my mom about this.
No, but I couldn't help but notice the way that you dealt with, it was just a joke, the way that you dealt with what our conversation about, your trial and your peace of mind and where you are now. How do you look at, I would love to get your thoughts. I don't And I know it's going to be tough for you to answer because you're also a very proud former RCMP officer or law officer. You're also black. And when I put those two things together and I lump in what happened to you in Vancouver, I would love to get your perspective on systematic racism in police work. Does it exist? And then I would love for you, in fact, I'll even take it now. James Blake, who was shot 7 times in the back, and the since now public outcry, which rightfully so, you know, the video of seeing a black man getting shot in the back, an unarmed black man, 7 times, to me, no matter what was going on, is police brutality that is Jim Crow-esque. So I would love to get your thoughts on it from both sides, because you have a very unique perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, the simple answer to the questions, is there systemic racism in policing in North America? Yes. Is there some systemic racism in North America? Yes.
Did you know that when you were an RCMP officer, that there was systemic racism in policing? Did you feel it?
Did I know it? I had enough friends, minority friends, to know that in policing in general, to know that it existed. I come at this from basically three angles, right? So I come at it as a black man. I come at it as a former police officer, but I also come at it from the perspective of someone who was prematurely judged by the media when using force. So I look at every situation from all three of those angles, which puts me at odds with many different people sometimes, because yeah. If I talk to black friends of mine, that are not in the first responder world, their immediate thought is as soon as they see that 20-second clip, automatically it's racism if it's a white cop and a black person. Whereas I always try to say, let me look at the whole story. Let me look at the whole story. I've always been someone who's kind of not very emotional. I kind of level-headed in all areas of life. So I try to look at, okay, well, what led to this result? Not what was the result, and was it horrible, but what led to the result? And could we have prevented it not just by looking at the obvious, which is the police actions, but right. Let's look at everything, the whole picture, and see, okay, could this have been prevented in many ways? And is this truly an act of racism when I look at everything? Because not every interaction between a white cop and a black person is racist.
Right.
But it's being assumed, which kind of triggers my PTSD when people assumed that when, you know, I used the taser on Robert Jankowski, that was excessive force. And they just went with that. They didn't know the training. They didn't know anything leading up to why we were there and what training I received.
Oh yeah. They just went with the narrative that fit whatever caste system they came from because you're black.
Yeah. 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 Well, I mean, at the time it was not even black, but being a police officer. And then, you know, I won't tell you some of the emails I got, but you can imagine.
Did you
people
get
creative with their language.
Did you get a lot of emails from people after that whole thing?
Is the
N-words?
Question.
A lot of N-words?
Oh, yeah. And it's not just did, Dean. I've received emails up to, I think the last one I received was last month, actually. So I know it's always going to happen. Oh, yeah. So that it's
the fuck is wrong with you.
It's probably always going to come, and that's why that's one of the reasons I like to talk to kids about bullying too, because I know what it's like to be online bullied, because it's happened to me for a decade plus. Mm-hmm. So, that's just the truth of that situation. But anyways, that's how I approach these situations. I look at the whole thing, as opposed to jumping to one view over the other.
Okay, so. What did you see as, like, okay, do you have to put on different hats for this conversation? Like, do you have to put on, like, a civvy hat and then a cop hat? Or can you just tell us?
No, I just talk now because I'm not a cop anymore. So okay. My hat is just Quasi, is just who I am
just
now.
Quasi.
So.
Just Quasi. Just Quasi. That'll be the name of the podcast if you ever do one. Just Quasi.
Yeah, there you go. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. No, you go ahead. Let's just keep doing the you go ahead thing for a while. You go ahead. I'll go ahead. You go ahead.
Yeah. Let's do it for the next 20 minutes.
you go through, you see the seven shots. Is it police brutality? Is it just another senseless murder of a black man? Because that's what I saw. I don't give a shit about what he did before that. I don't. Because in every single other situation, he should not have been shot in the back seven times, no matter what he did. Unless he's pointing a gun at an officer, unless he's willing to shoot, and unless it's me or him, and that's a split. But there was no me or him there. And he's black. So to me, that's fucking racism and police brutality. That's systematic racism in policing in action.
Okay, so is it systematic racism? Because I agree with you with the brutality part, but is it systematic racism or is it a training issue or is it both?
Mm.
Right? So if, for instance, everyone in the scenario is white and he gets shot, we're talking about it as a training issue. Mm-hmm. These officers may not have been trained correctly. They're shooting too many times. But because who was shot was black, we automatically assume it's racism. Is it racism or is it a training issue or is it both? It's just a question for discussion. So that's the question I automatically ask. Whereas most people just assume that it's racist, and it might be. But it also might be a training issue. Like these officers weren't trained to properly defuse the situation before it got to the point where this guy's reaching in his car. Maybe he's reaching for a knife. That's how they may justify it, because apparently he had a knife in the car. When they have to articulate what they did, they may say something to the effect of, we fear death or grievous bodily harm. He was going for a knife, so he shot before he pulled out the knife. Mm. They may say something like that. I don't know. I don't know the whole situation. Then they're articulating, but then if they knew who this person was beforehand, if he had a criminal record beforehand, perhaps they should never have let him got to the car and no gun should have been out. They should have stopped him from going to the car so that they didn't have to make that decision. So that scenario is a training issue. Were they racist as well? Maybe. But I'm just saying, I don't assume racism right off the bat. I'm looking at training, looking at racism. Like, and I'm not in their policing department. This is something that their police chief should be looking at and, you know, coming out and saying, okay, is this a training issue? Right. Maybe there's a press conference in order. I don't know. I don't know how they do things down there, but
not good. I'll tell you that. Yeah, I know how they do things down there. They shoot and figure it out.
Yeah, and then stay silent and let the public draw their own opinions. No, we need to, you know, we need voices saying, okay, this is what we did. Let's get it out there. And if that has been done, then I guess it just hasn't been reported and we're not hearing the right side, all the sides.
So I would ask you a question. I would ask you a question about the policing portion of this. You make a lot of sense to me with what you just said. What you're saying is there aren't just two factors in what's going on. It's not all just about racism, and it's not all just about police brutality, right? It's about how long have those officers been on the job? How well are they trained? How many of those guys had preconceived notions before they went there or knew what they were going into? How many of those officers, because, you know, I fucking hate Donald Trump, but he said something the other day that was actually pretty funny, but it was gross at the same time. He said, when cops shoot people by mistake, they choke. It's like choking on a 3-foot putt. They're just shitty cops. They just shouldn't be cops. So, you know, factor that in. Like, everybody points to one of these things being the entire issue. What you're saying is it's a little bit of everything here. Sure, there might be systematic racism. Sure, they had preconceived notions, maybe. But nobody's waiting, and this is why we're here, right? Nobody's waiting to get any of those answers. It's just always about one thing or the other. And then, of course, you've got a whole bunch of backwoods, you know, honkies and white meatheads out there trying to separate everybody by being in their own group. So I would ask that question. I would ask the question is, like, is it Well, fuck. Are we missing like 17 different things right now in regards to rolling this out and trying to figure out where we are civilly?
My guess is that we're making too many statements and not asking enough questions. Mm. People are making accusatory statements. People are inflamed. People are angry. People aren't asking questions. The questions I just asked, are people asking these questions or are they just assuming racism, right? They had that other case. And I don't remember the guy's name, but he was intoxicated, going through a drive-through. He parked. And they showed video of officers questioning him.
Oh, it was in Arizona.
He was definitely drunk.
Yeah.
He was definitely drunk. And he said, okay, well, I'm just going to go walk to my, you know, my friend's house or something like that. Yeah. A sister's house. And they said they're going to arrest him because he's intoxicated. Now, from what I saw, there was a scuffle. Taser came out. And then off camera, he was shot. And I believe those officers were either fired or charged. I don't know the exact situation.
One was fired. One was charged and fired. Yeah.
One was charged. And yeah, I have to go and kind of start to make my list of who was charged, where it was, and and so on and so forth. But everyone jumped on race right there. And they're making statements. Mm-hmm. But the question that I don't know if people are afraid to ask because we don't want to ask questions when someone dies, but why isn't anyone asking why did he fight in the first place, right? So why isn't anyone asking, okay, well, why, you know, when he was about to be arrested for being drunk, why did the fight have to start then? Why did he initiate that fight? Maybe there was something gotten wrong later, but people aren't asking why did he fight when the police were actually just talking to him at first.
Yeah.
And they arrested him. And then they tried to arrest him for being drunk, which is an arrestable offense.
But then they shot him in the back.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm segmenting what happened later. I don't know where he was shot. I don't know that situation. But I'm just saying people don't ask these questions and they don't even have the discussion. And that's all I'm wanting to say.
People don't
have the full discussion
about the incident itself. We just go
about the incident and about everybody's behavior in the incident. Even if we still end up with the cops being charged, that's fine. But we need to have the whole conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And so then maybe I don't know if this is going to happen for sure, but maybe if we are willing to have that discussion, then down in that community, Black leaders sit with Black youth and say, listen, it's tragic what happened. Those officers need to be charged. They're racist, blah, 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 blah. But when you encounter police, this is what you do. So we need to have elders sitting down with young people saying, this is what our friend that tragically died did wrong. Mm-hmm. When you encounter police, let's be smarter from the get-go, right? Especially in the States now.
But that should be a conversation, you know, I don't know if you're referring to just, you know, explaining, you know, Black men, older Black men in the Black community, explaining that to younger Black men. I think that should be explained to everybody. I think, you know, I've had this fear of the police my whole life because I remember when I was a kid, I broke a couple windows and my dad told me the cops were coming at someone else's house, by the way. I was just throwing rocks. I was like 4 years old. I had a great arm. I was like, right through the back window across the street. And and my dad told me they had tigers in the back of the car and watch out. That's literally what he told me. And he said,
yeah.
You know, and then when I grew up, ultimate authority was the police. They got guns. You shut up when you get your ticket. You say please and thank you. And that's it. And so, you know, I have a different mindset of what, you know, policing is and how police, you know, I respect the profession. I really, really do.
And my mindset is different than what I just explained and what you said. Like, no, seriously.
Go ahead. Go ahead. What's your mindset?
No. My mindset, because what I said was that we need to have, you know, conversations with young Black youth. You said you had those conversations Do we need to have those conversations? Maybe now, yes. But I never needed to be told by my mother. I was raised by a single mom. I didn't need her to sit me down and say, if the police say ABC, this is what you do. Listen, I went to school. I saw them come into the school. I get it. I didn't need a lesson on how to be chill
But did
when.
you ever experience, racial inequality by police as a black young man?
Absolutely. I mean, I was followed when I would be walking in malls and things like that. Like I felt the presence of, I wouldn't even know if it's police or security guards in malls and in places where I would be, where I'm actually followed, and I could feel that I was being followed and watched more than people that were around me that were not black. Yes. So I did notice that. I grew up in Rexdale, so I know North Etobicoke. I know that feeling. And that feeling of, okay, well, I got to be careful around them. So
And so,
that feeling was
and your
bred in
mom
me.
never
So.
had to sit and talk to you about it. Like I hear a lot of people, their parents, you got to sit your young black men and women down. You got to talk to them. Like Sam Mitchell, the former coach of the Toronto Raptors the other day, shocked the shit out of me. He was like, even as I coached the Raptors, as I was coaching a team of NBA basketball players in this beautiful suburban city of Toronto, beautiful Canada, no racism. He's like, I put my fucking wallet on the dashboard and I keep my hands on the car because that's what my dad told me to do. And he said, you've been doing it his whole life, been pulled over for being black. It's I would just wonder why you would then become a cop.
Well,
That's.
I actually talked to my mom about that the other day, that she actually never had those conversations with me, like making me hypervigilant or afraid of the police. That's kind of what I just did when I got stopped. And I don't know if that's just something I learned through osmosis, but I don't know. I don't know what the exact answer is, your solution, what I mentioned earlier, or saying nothing, but I think something has to be said, I guess. That's where we're at now.
Do you think in general, looking back on things that we've seen in the past 6 to 10 months, this push towards the rest of the world just telling, especially white people, just white people, for the rest of the world wants to feel as mediocre as we do. I heard someone say that the other day. I loved it. I'm like, I wish everybody could experience how mediocre being a dumb white guy is. It's not what people are telling you it's cracked up to be. It's just and only because I think about where, white patriarchy got us, right? In colonialism, I can go back in time to that. But I've never in my life been challenged by something so serious internally, other than trying to figure out what side of this whole thing I'm on and whose group I'm in, right? Because we live so socially now, we live in this world where, we see these things going on in the black community and they haven't stopped. They've just gotten worse, worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And now everybody's looking for them. But not all of these situations are the same. Right? Not all of the situations are the same. Some of the situations are different. As you pointed out, you got to get all the information. But it would be really, really, really nice if we could have these conversations and not have to, as you said, or in us talking about, not have to prep people to deal with the police differently because their skin's a bit of a different color. Do you know what I mean? Like, it would be really nice if the stats weren't the way they were, which is like, for every one white guy that goes to jail in Canada, I think there's three visible minorities that go to jail in Canada in that regard. And again, I go back to what happened in your case. Four officers charged with something, two white, two not, the two guys who weren't white go to jail. And it's see-through at this point for me. It's see-through. It might not be to you because you've got a better perspective, but I can clearly see where we as a society have embraced the police state, have tried to with impunity, and I'm not just talking about Canada. I'm talking about, like, you know, white North America, where we've been really okay with the way things are going, because white people are in charge. We have been for years, and nobody wants to wreck it. Nobody wants to break it. And so you've got a visibly angry, you know, Black Lives Matter movement, and rightfully fucking so. And you've got people in that are visible minorities that are afraid of the police. And we're only finding out that it's this bad now. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's such a huge job in trying to change people's minds and get them to see the equality or the equivalency of another human being, no matter their color or their skin. But there's this, you get emails from people that just don't want, somehow in their minds, that because of the color of your skin and the color of my skin, we're not equal. That's, and still, after seeing everything on TV, guys getting shot in the back and the face and run over, and we still somehow, there's an alternative opinion. That's the part that fucking stresses me out, is that someone can tweet you or send me an email and go, really? That's the side you want to be on? The angry, disgusting, ugly, stupid, fucking racist side? That's the side you want to be on? But it's easy for me to understand because I've been through it and I've been watching it, and I've just kind of shut up and tried to formulate a proper opinion of it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think it starts with police leadership. I mean, if there's always going to be people that send those tweets or that think that way, we need to make sure that those aren't the people running the police departments. Right? And that we have... and also courageous people, right? I mean, it's there's a book called The Courageous Police Leader, or I think it's called Courageous Police Leader, by Travis Yates. He's down in the States, and he just calls for more courage amongst police leadership. Mm-hmm. And part of that is getting out in front of the camera and explaining the actions, whether it's the officers did the right thing and this is why, or the officers did the wrong thing and this is why, or they did the right thing up to a certain point. Mm-hmm. And just explaining, because people think they think that police officers are these people that are superhuman and they don't make any mistakes, and you know, they get the training to do everything perfectly in every situation. And it just needs to come down from a higher rank that, listen, this is what they did right, this is what they did wrong, and this is what we're doing as a force to make things better. Mm-hmm. And if something like that happened every time, hopefully fewer of these things happen, these situations happen, but if something like that happened every single time you see the face of the organization on camera, you know, it's got to help, because then you see a face and now you know, okay, he was on TV saying exactly about his officers there, but don't worry, you can trust our department. This is what we're doing in response to that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And unless I missed it, I turned off the TV too soon. I'm not a big news watcher, so maybe it's happened and I just haven't seen it. But I think that would start a lot of the healing process. Mm-hmm. If that happened more often.
In police work, you mean? Like in
yeah, well, police work is the focus.
Transparency.
Police work is the focus now. Police work is the focus now, but it's anywhere. It's like I go to eat at a restaurant here in Burlington, and the owner of the restaurant comes out and says, "How are you enjoying the meal?" Like, how do you feel when that happens, right? You probably have had that experience.
I don't like that. That's not okay. No, I hate it. I hate it because I've already told the waitress it's fucking good if it's good, and then for the chef to come out and ask me if it's good, I'm like, okay, listen, I am in the middle of a bowl of arrabbiata right now. And okay. You can clearly see I'm enjoying it. You could have just asked the lady who asked me the same question 3 seconds ago. So no, I disagree with you. Okay. Continue.
So what if he was to turn around and say, we're also going to give you a free dessert to take home. It's our specialty.
I'm in.
We want you to have that. Yeah. Well, that's what this guy did. But anyways, just seeing the owner made me feel a little bit more at home in the restaurant. Okay, so this is the face of the organization talking to me.
Yeah.
So any company, whether it's a police service or a corporate organization, You know, when you're in a cubicle and you see the CEO walk by, okay, you maybe shit your pants for a minute, but you know, if he comes in with a smile and says, you know, just checking in on everybody, I mean, yeah, that'd be crazy, right? It's like, yeah, you don't ever see someone high up ever, right?
No.
And we're not seeing that. And maybe if we saw it, it might start to change things. If we got to see, okay, this is who's running this show, maybe we don't need to defund the whole organization,
right?
Because from the top, it's looking like things are going to change, or he's had something positive to say that I feel good about.
Do you think police need better training?
That's a blanket question. It looks like in a lot of places in the States, yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
But, you know, I'd have to go service to service to answer that question. Yeah. I can't just say it's a yes or no across the board.
Super smart answer. I like that. I like that. I'd have to go to service to service. I'm not willing to do that at the moment. and are you happy today? You know, going through everything that you've been through, and your story is remarkable. In case you're just joining us, Kwesi Millington, motivational speaker, health and wellness coach. He does physical training as well. He's been through the ringer, and been to the bottom. And now all I want to do is talk to you about life, because you make sense to me. You found your life again, helping people, but are you happy today?
Yeah, I would say I'm happy. And when you say happy, it's funny. They did a study and showed that there's four times as many books written on happiness today as there was in my mother's generation. Yet people are four times unhappier than they used to be. So,
it's
not the books. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So I call that my 4-4 statistic. but happiness is a choice. And so some days, you know, you have times in the day where you're not that happy, you know, like PTSD kicks in a little bit, and, mm-hmm, you know, I reach for the tools. Is all it is just having tools in your pocket that can help you to be happy in the moment. Right. Mm-hmm. So whether that's spending time with my wife and son, whether that's, you know, writing a blog or just getting out there, whether it's coaching, speaking, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So yes, I am, because I choose to be happy.
And with that, we will end the interview with Kwesi Millington, who's written a couple of pieces for us. Your story's remarkable. Your personality is incredibly authentic. And my life is better for talking to you today. And I appreciate the light that you bring into the world and doing what you do. KwesiMillington.com. If you have any questions, he's a motivational speaker. He's a health and wellness coach. He's a wonderful man. So listen, dude, I appreciate not only your perspective, but your attitude. Thank you for doing this. And hopefully it wasn't as shitty as I thought I was. And you come back and do this again.
No, you're great. I'm honored to be on your show. So appreciate you. Thank you.
Anytime. Thanks so much. That is Kwesi Millington. Again, KwesiMillington.com. Great guy. Unbelievable journey. Crazy story. I don't know if I got that kind of forgiveness in me. I don't. And I've had to forgive a lot of people. But, you know, the crazy part about his story is it's like everybody else's story. It's just, if it was a story, it was a Christmas tree, the ornaments are just different on his. The Christmas tree, of course, being the issue that people need to fucking get past, which is really fucking hard to get past. It's hard to get past anything when you're your own victim, right? Don't be a victim. You can be the author of your story, or you can be the victim of the story. And that starts with accountability and acceptance. The acceptance that your reality is your reality. Don't fight it. Just control what you can control. Anyway, that's enough of this motivational horseshit. Have a great day. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Thanks to our friends at Blue Microphones. I've got it turned the right way today. Blue Microphones, the best microphones in the world. It's fact. These headphones made by Blue, these Emmy-winning, the best in the world. A podcaster's broadcaster's dream, Blue Microphones. Check them out on Twitter at Blue Microphones as well. Thanks, Joel. You're a great dude. Our friend Matt and everybody at Streamlabs. This is brought to you by Streamlabs OBS, as well as DK Media, and our friends over at Envision Digital Solutions, envision.co. If you're building a website, you're looking to monetize your website, looking for a digital strategy, envision.co is the website you need to go to. And again, thanks to our friend at Ed's Fine Imports. Gitch, he's got them. Boxer briefs, pouch in the front. It's like a tree fort for your fella. Tree fort, because there's leaves down there. Not with me. It's always winter. Anyway, what you want to do is you want to give Ed your promo code. Gitch3, buy three, get one free. Ed's Fine Imports, boxer briefs, pouch in the front, home for the fellas. Quality, luxury, underwear. Ed'sFineImports.com. Hope I didn't forget anybody. Did I get everybody, Sean? Thanks to my friend Sarge, Sean Sargent, for setting this up. He's our technical producer. Thanks to Chris Rook, our producer and head of production, for these details as well. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the weekend. Take control of your happiness. Fuck it. It's just life. Bye.